Okay, so this is our 10th Shiur on Megillat Esther. The learning is this week is sponsored by the Bromberg family in honor of Yara Aliza's Bat Mitzvah. Mazel Tov. Okay, we're in the third parak of Megillat Esther. We are, we talked a little bit ago, two times ago, I think, about Haman's promotion. We talked about the Megillah comparing, contrasting Haman and Mordechai as a, we discussed how it's a reenactment of the famous battle between Shaul and Amalek, and that Haman here is representing Amalek, and Mordechai is representing Shaul, the Bnei Israel, and it's an eternal battle, right? It's door for door, right? It's Milchamala Hashem Amalek, me door door. And so we have to understand why that is, but we know, and the Megillah explicitly puts Mordechai as a descendant of Kish, which is Shaul's father, and explicitly identifies Haman as Ha'agagi. Now, the Maseret Sofrim traces Haman's lineage and doesn't put him in Amalek at all. There's another Medrash, I think the Yerushalmi, if I'm not mistaken, I might have that wrong, that traces Haman's heritage back to Amalek, but not Agag. Okay, regardless, the Megillah is still calling him Ha'agagi, putting that in our mind, that he's at least adopting the Amaleki ideology, whether he's an actual descendant, he's an ideological descendant, irrelevant to our purposes. He's clearly adopting that approach. And so that battle is not won, meaning Shaul did not completely eradicate Amalek. Thank you so very much. Shaul did not completely eradicate Amalek, and therefore this is coming to be. The Rishon Alkabetz, the Magen Halevi, makes a big deal about it. He says, you know, at the end of the Megillah, it's not just that we survive, right? Unlike most other stories of pogroms, of tragedies, that where we, Baruch Hashem, the Jews made it. Here, not only did we make it, but the main point is, Asher Yisrael to Yehudim Hema Ba'ivayim. The whole thing is flipped, Vina Hafochu. The whole thing is flipped. We completely defeat them. That's rare in Judaism, right? I mean, even the Chashmonaim, even in Hanukkah, we didn't actually completely defeat the Greeks. Even after the Hanukkah story, the Greeks still had a stronghold in Yerushalayim. I forget their name. There's a name for the location where they were still there. But the Greeks still had a stronghold in Yerushalayim. They just weren't in charge, but they were still there. Here it's Asher Yisrael to Yehudim Hema Ba'ivayim. He says, because now it's a complete eradication of Amalek. This is the end. It's finally complete. And it's part of that. It's because it follows in this whole eternal battle. That's why it's important that there be a complete victory, because up until now, it was incomplete. So we'll get to that, Mirtz Hashem, as it goes on. Fine. So we've discussed that Haman wants to kill the Jewish people. We've discussed that the Megillah gives no reason that he actually wants to kill the Jewish people. We know that he wants to kill Mordechai, and because he's Jewish, we may as well kill the Jewish people, because why not? And the fact that the Megillah doesn't give a reason is, I argued, there is no reason. Anti-Semitism doesn't need a reason, just an excuse. Mordechai is the next excuse. Va'yivez vein of lishlach yad Mordechai levadok, he gidilos am Mordechai, made an argument in the text, he gidilos am Mordechai. The only reason that we care is because he's Jewish. So we may as well kill all the Jews, because I now have an excuse. That's a pasuk vav. Haman wants to destroy all the Jews. Fine. So now, I don't think we got up to that. I think that's where we ended last time. So b'chodesh harishon b'chodesh Nisan, b'shnas 12 l'melech ha-chashverosh. So in Nisan, in the 12th month, hipil pur hu agora lifnei Haman. He makes a pur. I have to tell why that's important, because they call the holiday Purim based on this one word. So hipil pur hu agora, some type of a lottery. Lifnei Haman, miyom liyom, umechodesh lechodesh, neimasar chodesh adar. From day to day and month to month till the 12th month. So we don't even get the results of that lottery yet, but he does this. Now it's fascinating. Haman hasn't yet asked Ahasuerus for permission. The next pasuk is going to ask Ahasuerus for permission to kill the Jewish people. He hasn't yet asked him for permission, but he already has a plan of how he's going to figure out when we're going to do it. He's fairly confident that Ahasuerus is going to give in. He clearly has a plan. Now, who cares about who cares how he comes up with a date? He picks a day. Who honestly cares what day he picked? Now, it becomes relevant, I understand, in the story, but the method by which he picked it seems completely not relevant to the plot. But it's even worse, because we call the holiday Purim, and in case you were wondering why we call it Purim, the Megillah later tells us, Al Shem HaPur. It tells you, we call it Purim because Haman hippil pur, which many of the Mepharshim wonder, like, look, you want to call a holiday something, you call it, even if you want to call it after the good guys, the bad guys, you're going to qualify the method by which Haman figured out the day to kill the Jewish people. It seemed almost tangential to the story. Clearly it's not. Clearly it's not. We're calling the holiday Purim, so this Pur is important. So what exactly happened? What did he do? What was this lottery system? How did it work? So, Mepharshim, everyone tries to guess, but if you read the text, and the Yosef Lekach, as a parish on the Megillah, and it seems to be Meduyak, if you read it. So what did he do? Let's read the pasuk again. Hibul Pur Hu Agorah Lifnei Haman. If he would have just told me, Hibul Pur Agorah Lifnei Haman, he had a lottery. Miyom Leyom Mechodesh Lechodesh Nei Masar. From day to day and from month to month. What is that actually adding? It's seemingly describing how he did the lottery, right? From day to day and month to month. I mean, you could have envisioned it. I could have envisioned it in one of two ways. You could take 365 different pieces of paper, put them in the Monday, you just say, put them in the box, and then pull one out. Or you could put 30 pieces of paper, pick a date, and pick a month. Right? You use less paper that way. So I thought, no, that's what he did. He took 30 pieces of paper, right? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, picked out the date, then picked out the month. And that's what I would have always assumed. So he says that could be Yosef Lekach, but he says, well, just think about the story. When is this happening? What's the date? So it says B'chodesh HaRishon, it's Nisan. What date? What date in Nisan? Interesting. So it's before Pesach, right? So how do we know any of this? So here it doesn't say, but we know from the rest of the story, it's going to be a big machlokas, exactly what date. We know that part of the Purim story, when Esther makes a party, one of the parties, something is around Pesach time. It's going to be a big machlokas, we'll have to sort it out. What day? So Pesach is, again, the 15th of Nisan is the first day of Pesach. The 14th of Nisan is the Bir Chametz in the morning. The 14th at night, the 15th, that's Pesach. That's the Leil HaSeder, is the night of the 15th, right? The night after the 14th, before the 15th. So when exactly does this happen? So the Yosef Lekach, this is a big machlokas. He assumes that this is taking place actually on Yud Dalid, on Erev Pesach. He assumes that, and then, well, it doesn't seem that way. He assumes that the whole story goes really quickly, flies really quickly. So he's standing on Erev Pesach. And he says, okay, day to day. So he says, what do you mean day to day? That's not how you, if I was right, that he took 30 pieces of paper and he wrote 1 to 30, and he put them in a hat, you wouldn't tell me, miyom liyom, from day to day. That's just not how you would describe it, right? Hibul Pur Agorah Lifnei Haman, bayamim uvachodashim. Something, I don't know. Miyom liyom means from day to day. So he comes up with an idea that, no, he has some way of checking each day. He went through the days first of the month, and he checked each day, yes or no. He had some like way of like rolling the dice, yes or no. So he said, okay, the best day to do it is tomorrow. Tomorrow. Right? Not gonna, today is presumptuous. Tomorrow. So tomorrow's the 15th. So he railed the dice the 15th. No. 16th. No. 17th. No. 18th. 19th. 20th. 21st. 22nd. 23rd. 24th. 25th. 26th. 27th. 28th. 29th. 30th. No. Well, you got to go back to the first. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13. And he gets to 13. I mean, 13th is the day before. It's the last possible day. And it comes out to the 13th. Right? Because we know it comes out to Yud Gimel Adar. Right? So it's the last possible day. And from month to month, he's standing in Nisan. Why he's using the Jewish calendar, I'm not exactly sure, but okay. Right? So he says, okay, Nisan, Iyar, Sivan, Tammuz, Av, El, Tishrei, Cheshvan, Kislev, Tevet, Shvat, Adar. It's the very last month. It's the very last possible day of the very last possible month according to this system. That's what the Yosef Lekach reads this as saying. His lottery coincidentally, and I use that word a lot, came out as the absolute last possible day that he envisioned it could be. Yeah, okay, correct, yeah, okay, fair enough, but even if that's true, and that was one of the questions on it, it still comes out to the last possible day, right? Meaning he points out that if you think this is happening in the beginning of Nisan, right, whatever day you want to give it, let's say you want to give it, he was standing on the 10th of Nisan, he said, you know what, the first day needs 4 days to prepare, whatever it is, he's clearly in the month of Nisan. And the last possible day is sometime in Adar, even if you're off by a couple of days here and there. It's still a full 11, it's still like a full 12 months, 11 months, right, depending on when in Nisan he's standing. That's a long time. That's a long time. He sees no problem with that. That is the last possible day. Haman is like, all right, that's not an issue. That's not an issue. But He points out that it's the last possible day. Haman sees that, makes nothing of it. Makes nothing of it. So why does he make nothing of it? Why is he doing this? If you're doing a lottery already, invest like something. He doesn't come off as like a religious character, Haman. Remember, we pointed out that the Medrash says, or the Gemara says, that he had an Avodah Zarah thing in his coat, but he reads the story of Megillah. He's not an overly religious person. Ahasuerus is not an overly religious person, right? The whole Megillah is not religious in any way, shape, or form. It never says anyone davens, let alone Haman. Mordechai, that's nobody's davening. No one's doing anything religious whatsoever. Certainly not Haman, certainly not Ahasuerus. We'll have to deal with that. But why is it focusing on this? And we call the holiday Purim based on this? So what is exactly happening? So if you take what we said last time, that the Haman-Mordechai battle is really just a perpetual reenactment of a Bnei Yisrael Amalek battle, okay, which I don't think is so far-fetched. They tried to prove that really, 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 the Megillah is really tying you in to Haman into Esav, Vayivaz Veinav, into Amalek, calling him the Agagi, and it's an eternal battle, and we finally win, Asher Yisrael to Yehudim, it's finally complete. So what is the attitude of Amalek? What does Amalek represent? So you read through Chazal, Amalek represents everything bad in the world, okay? But you read the Pesukim. If you read the Pesukim about what Amalek represents, I think I have them in the back, and we don't. Okay, that didn't work out. So if you look in the Pesukim, you'll have to trust me. The Pesukim say, right, Zachar es asher asalacha Amalek, sorry, I have to go through them all, right? Zachar is only like 10 Pesukim. It's only three. Zachar es asher asalacha Amalek, but derech v'teitzchem Yisrael. Remember, this is an epistete. What Amalek did to you when you left Yisrael, asher karecha baderech, kuf reishcha baderech, v'yizanev v'cha kol neches shalim acharecha, v'yizanev v'cha, from the word zanav, from a tail, kol neches shalim acharecha, all the neches shalim, the slow, weak ones in the back. That's a cheap way of fighting. Might be effective, but a little bit sly. So what's asher karecha baderech? What does that mean? Asher karecha baderech, kuf reishcha sofis. So either cooled you up. So what does the word mean? It could come from the word kar, from cold. Rashi there quotes that, you know, Bnei Yisrael were like the biggest thing. We were the hottest thing, and then they cooled us off. Don't think you're so important. Alternatively, it can come from the word mikre. Come from the word mikre. A mikre is a coincidence. A mikre is just something that happened. And there's a whole approach that develops that that's Amalek's attitude. Meaning, why are we so upset at Amalek? They attacked us. It's terrible. So kill them. But we make milchama la Hashem ba'amalek midor dor. Again, it sounds like it's a more eternal battle than just with these people. And their descendants? What did their descendants do? Ribono shel Olam. They didn't do anything. So the idea is they're representing an ideology. They're representing more than just people who attacked us, which is terrible. But why should we have a battle later on, like hundreds of years later? 1,000 years later? Well, who cares? It's apparently an ideology. So the ideology in the modern place of Chazal, you see, is developed by that of Mikre. What's the Mikre? Everything's a coincidence. Everything's a coincidence. Meaning, what you see is what you get. There's nothing hiding beneath the surface. Today, Israel just left Mitzrayim. Remember, the battle with Amalek happens in, it's a parsha of Beshalach, right after Kriyas Yamsuf. The Jews are just left Mitzrayim after 10 Makos, right? They just had the Yamsuf split in front of them. The Mitzrim drowned in the Yamsuf. You know, this is an interesting one of the Meshach HaMa. You didn't have to be very frum to believe in God, right? You didn't need to be like a big believer. You couldn't not believe in God, almost. There's even a question about Bechira Chassus. Like, do you really even have Bechira under those circumstances, right? Maybe that's what Kaf Alei Har Kegigis means. Kaf Alei Har Kegigis, not only that Hashem forced them to do it, but by making it so blankly obvious that he exists and he's there, you didn't really have a choice to say no. Maybe. Okay. But at least you understand the idea that they were very, very much aware of God in their everyday. This is right after, it's in Beshalach, right after the parsha of the Man. Right? This is the end of Beshalach. God is now not only talking about the Mitzrayim, he's providing them with food every day, each individual. So he's not only involved on a national level, saving Am Yisrael, he's not only involved in taking them out of Mitzrayim and moving them to their destiny, destroying the Mitzrayim, he now saved them at the Yam Suf, right? He's involved in what's happening right now. It's not just, he set a plan into place for the Esther Makos. You could say, no, he set a plan to the Esther Makos. But now, they're stuck at the Yam Suf, and God intervenes on the spot, in the moment. He'll tell me, that's only national. That's only on the national level. Each one of them just experiences this every morning they get the man. But then Israel are very, very, very much aware that God exists. He runs the world. He runs their lives. He's very real in their life. It's like a time of intense emunah. Right? the pasuk. Amalek represents mikra. None of that exists. Everything is random, coincidental. There's nothing. Random and coincidence means whatever happens, happens. There's no meaning behind anything. There's no meaning behind anything. And in fact, when the Rambam talks about, in other areas, in Hilchos Teshuvah, he says, you know, if someone says that, or approaches like there's no meaning, it's derech achzorius. The derech of Amalek is a derech achzorius. It's cruel. To think that things are random and happen for no reason whatsoever, then what's the purpose of existence and the meaning of existence? I remember Rosenzweig, when Mary Bain and Yeshiva spoke about this on 9/11. As it happened that day, so it was, you all probably remember, it was a lot of hefkeris going on, and we had a seer anyway, and so this is the drasha he gave at Amalek, that there's no coincidence in the world, God really runs the world, and thinking that what we could do whatever we want is derech achzorius. It's cruel, because it takes away the meaning from everything. That's what Amalek stands for. They're taking away the meaning from things, and we're saying, no, God is behind. Things happen for a reason. I may not know what the reason always is. I can't always see the reason, but there's clearly something happens for a reason, and Amalek is saying no. And so Haman is taking that back, and so he says, it doesn't matter what day it is. I don't care what day there's no meaning to anything of what day we'll decide to kill the Jews. Let's do a lottery. That's as random as it gets. As random as it gets is a lottery, because who cares? And right in front of him, it's the last possible day of the lottery. So we would all be like, hey, wait a minute. Maybe reconsider. No. To him, the whole thing is ridiculous. It's that there's no meaning behind events. It's just whatever happens, happens. It's completely coincidental. Maybe that's why we call the holiday Purim. Because Purim, we go to the moment, where it's meant to be cynical. We're mocking the notion of Purim. The whole point of the Megillah is God is behind everything. So they try to attack us with Purim, and we're sort of attacking it, making fun. Like, of course it's not Purim. Of course it's not random and coincidental. Even that which appears random and coincidental, the most random thing, we'll call it, is a lottery. There's no control. The most random thing, Purim, is also God hiding behind the scenes. Maybe that's why we call it Purim, based on this seemingly tangent, but it's not a tangent, it's the really lesson. Yes. So that's because I would argue it's one way of finding the most coincidental. What's the most random way of finding things? No meaning. There's no meaning. Oh, I'm not even going to look. The most random.
But that's also Catholic. So they all say that he didn't
hold
that in
Adar Moshe Rabbeinu. Yeah. This doesn't fit with all the Midrashim. That's correct. Mm-hmm. There's a Midrash that says he preferred Adar because Moshe Rabbeinu died. He didn't know he was born. But then what's the point? I never understood that. I never understood. It's the that medrash is very difficult. The medrash says that Haman was either he chose Adar because he knew Moshe Rabbeinu died in Adar, but he didn't know Moshe Rabbeinu was born in Adar. But then why blew a poor? I would always interpret that as it came out to Adar and he was excited because Moshe Rabbeinu died in Adar. That gives more correct. That's against what I'm saying. That's against what I'm saying. Correct. Could be. Yeah, so there's a whole other medrash that it was, he did it, he thought, the whole cheshbon, he realized Moshe Rabbeinu died, and so Zion Ches, Tes, Yudalot, Yudbeis, Yud Gimel, it was trying to cheshbon out, it should be the end of this, it should still be during the Shiva of Moshe Rabbeinu, not realizing it was also maybe the Brit, the whole cheshbon in the medrash. Okay. Not sure exactly how it worked, fine. I'm not sure exactly how the bris and the shiva work out, because the math doesn't work out. Shiva 7 days, the bris is 8 days. But fine. But again, that's that medrash that's adding to it. Again, I think, again, when we're doing midrashim in Megillas Esther, I think there are lots of midrashim that go in various different directions. I think the midrashim are trying to go in different directions. Because we have time to say. So it's not a problem. One of the, what I find great parts of Megillas Esther is that, it's very great, but there's very little religion in Megillat Esther. There's very little. It doesn't mention God ever. It doesn't mention doing anything. And Chazal are trying to fill in those gaps, right? So what happened? And they're filling in the gaps. And different midrashim will pull in different directions. And so, yes, I am presenting a particular approach that is not it does not align with all of those midrashim. Correct. So it doesn't say tefillah in the Megillah. Correct. So why doesn't the Megillah, though, say tefillah? Yeah, but they could have, but it doesn't, right? It would have been the perfect opportunity. Leich Knosses Kol Yehudim. We call it Beis Knesses. Leich Knosses. What were they doing? So just say they davened. just mention it. They don't mention it. It's strange that it's not said. It's just strange that it's not said. It's presented as a secular book. We say, no, they did. They davened. I think Knosis Kol Yehudim is, they davened, and I think it's appropriate. Maybe. So yeah, we have to say that, right? But it would just be funny. Like, the Tanakh is not shy on telling us people who davened. Correct. Oh, good question. I mean, again, I agree. I do believe they davened. I believe they davened, and I believe that HaKadosh Baruch Hu listened to our tefillah, and I think that's what actually happened. I just think it's interesting that the Megillah chooses not to highlight that. Right, all of that. But again, the Megillah chooses not to highlight that. The question is why. I'm not saying it didn't happen, but why does the Megillah as a book, again, written by Mordechai, choose not to highlight that? Interesting. Well, we'll get to get there. Fine. So again, I think that the poor is important because it represents Haman's ideology of everything is random and coincidental. And according to Yosef Lakach, the reader is now supposed to realize, hey, Yud Gimel Adar is the last possible time, and dude, take a step back and see what's happening, but Haman can't do that. Haman is everything's random and coincidental. And so we say, even Purim, even the poor, it's random and coincidental. You think it's random and coincidental. That doesn't exist. Everything is the Kadosh Baruch Hu. Rabbi Yonatan Sachs was here. He quoted, I don't remember who he quoted to say this, but I thought it was a beautiful pshat. I have to ask him where the quotation was from. He says, you know, before we read the Megillah, so when we read it B'tzibur, so they have to read it from Megillah Tzeirah, we have a practice that you have to post the Ki'igeres, right? If you ever see the Chazim, when he reads the Megillah, you have to open up the whole thing first, right? And then he reads it, and you have to flip it, and it's complicated. If you have a Megillah in your hand, so you just roll one hand with the other. So he said, symbolically, what does that represent? Not just post the Ki'igeres, so it's easier to flip. He says, why? Sometimes you need to see the whole picture. When you see the whole picture, that's when you see the Yad Hashem. When you're focused right here, I have blinders on, I see only one this one moment, I'm not able to see God's hand in things. But when we post the Ki'igeres, you see the whole picture from, you know, the 20,000 feet, then you see, that was symbolic, and I think it's part of the same idea. We're seeing the Megillah now, and Haman is not able, even Haman from 20,000 feet doesn't see any of this. He doesn't see that. Fine. So let's move on. So he does this poor, he fixed the date, only 5 minutes, but fine. Vayomer, this is important to read the Pesukim. He now asks for permission to kill the Jews. Right? He says, and the Megillah tells us before, that he wants to lahashmid et kol Yehudim, to destroy all the Jews. Right? Lahashmid et kol Yehudim, it's very clear, and I'm focusing on, it's very clear. Because if you look in Pasuk Ches, Vayomer Haman lamelech ha-Hashverosh, Yeshno am echad mefuzarim farad bein ha-amim, bechol medinos malchutecha, ודתיהם שונות מכולם, ודתי המלך אינם עושים, ולמלך אין שובר להניחם. I mean, he's making an accusation. There is this one nation, doesn't say Jews, one nation, עם אחד, מפוזר, spread out, מפורד, separated, בין העמים, all over the place. וכל מדינות מחודך, they're all over, it's pervasive. ודתיהם שונות מכולם, they do weird things. ודתי המלך אינם עושים, and they don't follow your rules, v'la'melech ein shoveh la'anicham, it's not worth it for you, shoveh, it's not worth it to let them go. Im ha'melech tov, if you find favor in your eyes, yikatev la'abdom, should be written la'abdom. Sure? Interesting. Let's say la'abed means to destroy, because that's what it generally means. Fair enough, it means everywhere else in Tanakh. V'asera salavim kikar kesef eshkol deyotem l'chala bil yitzei ha'melech, and I'll give you 10,000 kikar kesef. Okay? Let's just read the Pesukim first, right? Vayaser melech et havato me'al yado, the king takes off his ring, vayinah lahaman bedamdasa ha'agagi tzorer ha'yehudim. And he gives it to Haman. Again, it mentions ha'agagi here, right? Tzorer ha'yehudim, the hater of the Jews, meaning this is his moment, so like it makes sense that the Megillah is going to highlight his hatred of the Jews right now, but it again highlights his connection to Amalek, right? There's no reason. So there's this nation. Why do you want to kill them? And that's all I got. Okay, so... So, yeah, not only doesn't say who they are, I apologize, just one moment, I'll get you a Megillah, I don't want to misquote it for you. But you'll just have to trust me on this one. Okay. Esther, third parak, I apologize, I took the wrong parakim. Okay, fine. So he gives him the ring. What does he write? Vayomer HaMelech LeHaman, HaKesef Natun Lach, keep the money. V'ha'am, in the nation, la'asos v'katov v'einecha, do whatever you want. I don't care. Do whatever you want. I argued earlier that he doesn't care. Why does he not care? Haman wants something. Haman, he's buying Haman's loyalty. Haman, you want him to be loyal, so you want, okay, I'm making you the Duke of Salus. I'll make you the Duke of whatever. You want to kill the Jew? I kill whoever you want. They call the scribes. They write, everything that Haman says, Elach Hastar Panei HaMelech to the Achastar Panim. Gil says we don't know what that means. But the ministers of some type, Vela Pachos, and the governors, let's say, some other administrative level, Asherom Dina Umdina, that are in charge of each nation, each province, right? Because that's what's going to get the message. Vel Sarei Am Va'am, into the next level of ministers, we're giving out a lot of bureaucracy here. Alright? Medina Umdina Kichtava, Ve'am Va'am Kilshano, everyone in their own language, in their own text, so they don't question. B'Shem HaMelech HaChashverosh, in the name of HaMelech HaChashverosh, just giving permission, right? V'nichtav v'nichtam b'tavat HaMelech, it was written and signed with the king. What did it say? V'nishloach Sefarim, and they sent out books, B'yad HaRatzim, it comes to Yonos HaMelech, to spread it out. What did it say? L'hashmid l'harogol abed kol Yehudi, minar v'adzak ein taf v'nashim b'yom echad b'shushat ha'l'chodesh ne'masar u'shchodesh adar u'sholam lavos. To kill the Jews. Minar v'adzak ein, child, old person, Taf and Ushim, children, women, Piyom Echad, on one day, on the 13th of Adar, now we find out it's the 13th of Adar, right? He had the poor before. Right? Who called his name? Who stole all of us to take all their, and to, plunder, to take their plunder, to take their stuff. The reason I asked you about Le'abdom before was because if you compare what Haman asks Achashverosh, Yikatev Le'abdom. When he writes it, and it's only three psukim later, it says, Lahashmid, Laharog ula'abed. And all the time in the Megillah is Lahashmid, Laharog ula'abed. From here on, they always come as a triplet. Right? Beforehand, he said Lahashmid. Haman wants to, right before, we have it in front of us, Haman, after he sees Mordechai embarrassing him, he wants Lahashmid at Kol Yehudim. And when he tells Ahasuerus, it's Le'abdom. And then when he writes it, it's Lahashmid, Laharog ula'abed. Now, Laharog, I know what it means. Laharog means to kill. And Lahashmid, I'm fairly confident, means to kill also. La'abed, right, means to lose. So when you how do you lose something actively? So actively lose something, we use like, it's a figurative term, right? La'abdom, you want to lose them. You want to, we say destroy them, make them disappear. But it's admittedly a little bit more vague. Meaning when he writes it, there's no ambiguity whatsoever. Those letters get sent out, la'ashmid, la'harogu, la'abed. You're not sure if you did la'ashmid, do la'harog. You're not sure if you did. You make sure, pimachmir, until the end. But to Achashverosh, he just says le'abedam. So why? Secondly, he doesn't, we have to finish, but I'll leave the questions and we'll have to answer the next time. Secondly, he doesn't say who they are. Yeshno am echad. Who are, what do you mean, there is this one nation. Now, we know he's talking about the Jews, because he wants the Hashemid, it's called Yehudim. But why doesn't he tell Achashverosh the people, who they are? Why doesn't Achashverosh ask? You want to kill a bunch of people. I don't even care. That I understand he wants to give something, give into Haman to buy his oil. Who are you going to kill? Wild. He doesn't ask. Is it so obvious? Is it so obvious to Achashverosh who he's talking about? And then the Mepharshim go into, well, this accusation, right? The accusation is important because that's according to Megillah. Mefuzer mefored ben ha'amim. That they're scattered. So what? So they're scattered. Who cares? The only thing that's relevant in that he says they're mefuz, they're mefuz, they're scattered, right? And they do weird things. I don't know. Remember, they took over the Bavlim. They took over Bavel. Bavel was a big empire that moved people around all the time. They were a huge empire. They have a lot of different types of people all over the place. And all of them, I presume, that they hemshon note, where they all acted, had the same cultural idiosyncrasies. Unlikely. 127 provinces, everyone's going to do different things. The only thing is, they don't follow your rules. Now you're speaking to him. Now that makes sense. Okay, they don't follow my rules, you got to kill them. So why bother with the first two things? Who cares if they're mefuzer mefurad? Who cares if they're mshonos mikolam? Why is that relevant to the story at all? And then, the only thing that's relevant at the end, what is a very strange thing. And it works out. And what's with the ring? He has to give him the ring. And even if he does give him the ring, why do we need to hear about it? He gave him permission to send the letters. He sent the letters. Okay, so we'll have to pause here. Next week we'll start with some of these answers.